and then the condition of the hungry ghosts and all of that, and then the kingdoms of other beings such as animals and the asuras, who are sort of, as we mentioned before, kind of giant spirits, giant nature spirits and so forth. And all of this keeps going around. And so we have intermingled there the embodied states and the disembodied states. And then outside of the wheel, outside of the mechanism that makes this turn around, are the liberated ones, who are Buddhas. Sit on nice lotus thrones and look down upon this messy, churning situation here and probably say, oh dear, well, we are out of this now, maybe we can help some others to get out as well. Those are the three possibilities. We have a concept here that is very much akin to some early ideas in the early period of Christianity, such as Gnosticism, for instance, where life and afterlife are in fact the world of a kind of a cosmic system, the world of the demiurge. They are the cosmos, the system, that works on the basis of the opposites. This is what Heraclitus, the Greek philosopher, called enantiodromia, a system where the opposites inevitably lead into each other. As long as the opposites are there, their one particular polarity will reach a sort of ultimate state of its magnitude, a saturation point, and then it begins to switch over into its opposite. Very interesting principle, and very akin, for instance, to Taoism, because that's the way the yin and the yang work. That's why in the Tao, the circle of the Tao, if you remember, where there are these two wave-like divisions, halves of the circle, there is a little spot inside of these that's of the opposite color. The black half has a light-colored spot, the light half has a dark-colored spot. And the idea is when the black gets as black as it can get, the light inside of it begins to dawn and begins to expand and takes it over. And the same with the black. And you see, we have a very, very hard time envisioning that. For instance, that when you, just as an individual, when you have become as male, as macho as you can become, then you begin to turn into female. Huh? Tell that to some of the members of the American Rifle Association or whoever. And the other way too. You know? And that, of course, is the psychological principle that the underlying polarity will not be denied, and at a certain point it will begin to assert itself. And really, the more you push in one direction, the more certain you are that you are going to end up with the opposite. Carl Jung discovered these things, that it's true sort of in moral terms too. You know, the really intelligent way is to be kind of natural, and by natural I mean not eating sprouts or horrible things like that, just kind of truly trying to live up to one's nature, which of course involves the deeper nature as well, in a balanced sort of a way. But if you decide in your head that you are going to be, quote, good, you know, and you pursue that goodness with all the vengeance of the righteous, you know, sooner or later that good is going to switch over into the bad, whatever the good and the bad happen to be by your standards. That is why the very, very righteous have such a peculiar way of all of a sudden manifesting the very opposites of their standards. I understand it's even true of the our great spiritual leaders, the television preachers, from time to time. Here they have fought this particular evil all this time in front of millions of people, and then behold, whatever there, whatever there is to behold. These are all the manifestations of enantiodromia, that switching over into the opposite. But we don't understand that. So the death of life, in a sense, is afterlife. And the death of afterlife is life in a new embodiment. You see, each one dies. This is known in Buddhism as samsara, the world of manifestation where all is revolving on the great wheel, up and down, around and around, as we said before. But the principles within this need to be recognized, and that is where the tremendous cultural differences exist between the way our psychology works and the way the psychology of the Buddhist peoples, for instance, works. We have to make a real effort to shift gears in our own mind, in our own psychological makeup, to view even tentatively, even experimentally, as a matter of experiment, to view reality in those terms. And I don't just mean an intellectual acceptance, but a real acceptance of that interconnectedness. Life changes into afterlife, afterlife changes into life. Round and round. Light changes into the dark, back into light again. Keeps going. But of course that's not all there is. If it were, it would be a considerable occasion for monumental sadness. But the discovery of Buddha, as we pointed out the last couple of Wednesdays, precisely is in this. First, to recognize that this is the reality of samsara. And don't dress it up. Don't add all kinds of moralistic or other kind of unrealistic embellishments. No, don't gild this dark lily. But realize it for what it is. It's not evil, but it's not all that good either. It's a trap. It's a predicament. It's a system, a machine that works in that particular way. But the Buddha's great discovery is that there is a way out of that. It is that way for most people and most creatures, but it doesn't have to be that way. And the Buddha discovers that there is an other way. But at the same time, also there is a, even in the most, the most popular folk religious presentations of Buddhism, maybe I'm prejudiced in favor of Buddhism in that respect, but if you listen closely to what the people are saying, if you observe closely what they believe, there is a curious subtlety to it all. It's never really gross. It's never really heavy. I mentioned to you the last time the Buddhist image of, frequently used Buddhist image of reincarnation. So entirely different from the Hindu, the usual Hindu, or even more importantly the cockeyed views which Westerners have of reincarnation. It's not part of their tradition. They latch on to some version of it and then, like a good hound dog, they put it between their teeth and run with it. And that has been happening, for 100 and some years in the West. Now we have all of these people who fiercely believe in reincarnation, but the way they believe in it is so gross, so reductionistic, so crude. The Buddhist, in turn, you ask the Buddhist, is there such a thing as reincarnation? He will say, yes. Look at it this way. Look, there are these two candles, and the one is lit and the other one is unlit. You transfer the light from the lit candle to the unlit candle and extinguish the light of the previously lit candle. Is it the same flame or is it a new flame, says the Buddhist. And he won't answer it. But a Westerner goes to work and says, sure, here is that soul, and it, gets out of the body and it floats around for a while and boom, it goes into another body. And that's reincarnation. That's the way it is. The Buddhist says, well, yes, something is happening. But don't be so sure making a cut and dried system out of it. It's a mysterious thing. If it were you reincarnating in this screaming baby 100 years from now, 50 years from now, whenever it is, you know, wouldn't there be more of you in there somehow? Says the Buddhist. And he said, the reason for that is that this you that you think you are has a very ephemeral reality. It doesn't have the capacity to go into another body. Well, they say, then what goes? Well, they say certain energies go. They call them the skandhas. They are sort of forces, tendencies. Tendencies of the soul, but not a hard and fast defined human self. That would not be compatible with the anatta. So it's a very doctrine, the no doctrine of no self. So it's all, there is always a somewhat ephemeral subtlety there, which probably irritates the living daylights out of the coarse dogmatic mind, especially of a Westerner who wants to seize upon something very, very definite and then have it. My old story, which note now again from the umpteenth time, if you won't choke up and tell, you know, the omnipresence of God, is God in this class? Yes, I've got him, you know, always holding it down. And so the Bardo Tadur, this vast model of reality as seen as one looks into the dark of death, is based on this proposition. There are really six states of Bardo, although most of the more simplified books will only talk about the three, and those are the ones I have here, because the first three of the first three states of Bardo are the ones that we experience while we are in embodiment. You don't hear that very often. So that's why the Bardo is really a book of life as well as of death, or of the living and of the dead. And the first three are the Bardo that we experience while we are in the womb of our mother. The little embryo, at least from a certain point on, goes through an experience of an inner cosmos before it comes forth. The second one is the Bardo of the dream state, called Milam Bardo. And these people are great believers in dreams, and they say that the dream again has its own cosmos. It's an altered state. It's the way we experience the other side of being while we are still in the body. After all, and this is probably one of the more comforting little ideas that one can come up about death, is that as far as we are able to tell, death is not all that much different from going to sleep. I've been around a few people at the moment they died, that's certainly the way it looks when you are observing them. There is considerable indication that there is a great similarity, only this is one where one doesn't come back into that organism any longer. And so the Tibetans say, look, every time you fall asleep, you undergo a little death. It's just like death. It's not that different. And therefore, there is a Bardo that comes after that. It's the Bardo of dreams. And that if you had a very good dream recall and a good model of understanding them, you would see the order of the inner cosmos revealed in the dream. And I'm mentioning this at this point because the after-death bardo, the three bardos over there, is really the model for all of these, so that we could apply this system that I'm going to come to in a minute also to our dreams. You will see how that works, but just very, very quickly, what we are dealing with here, that there are three great regions. There is the region of the Buddha light. I shouldn't go away from this. The region of the Buddha light, the ultimate, up there, where liberation is possible. Now, there is a certain number of our dreams in which we come very close to the core of reality within ourselves. We remember very few of them. They are the so-called big dreams. The ancients in Greeks and Romans and always said that there are, in some dreams we meet the gods, the Olympians. That's up there. Then there is another region. The middle region is the world of the opposites, where powers of light, powers of darkness, powers of peace and powers of wrath struggle with each other. Bounce, make you bounce back and forth. Conflict, in other words, big, titanic inner psychic conflict. Conflict can be resolved inwardly. When there is a resolution of psychic conflict in the soul, we say in modern psychological terms, then there again is enlightenment. And then there is the other where none of that is any longer possible, but where one is drawn down, drawn toward physicality, toward waking up, and toward physical experience. That's the Siddha Bardo down below. Now, we have dreams that fit all three of those categories, if we only understand our dreams. So that's the Bardo of the dream state. And the third one is what might be called the Bardo of ecstasy. Such as is brought about by any number of experiences that cause an ecstatic altered state. Not sleep, but another kind. Meditation, contemplation, archetypal ritual, you name it. So there again, one goes through these worlds. That is why in the 60s and thereabouts, there were some people who used the Bardo, particularly these three states, to guide people through psychedelic experiences. There was one famous book, it had a famous name. I think it was one of the early books by the famous or infamous trinity of Leary, Ralph Metzner and Alpert. I think it was just called the psychedelic experience, something like that. They used the model of the Tibetan Book of the Dead for that kind of ecstatic experience. They did a rather good job of it too. And that falls into this category, the Samtam Bardo, which is the Bardo of altered state experience. In all of these cases, we still have the physical body. But then there are the next three that are concerned really with the state when the body is left behind, the after-death state. And they are the Chikkai Bardo, when we are going to each one of them in detail, where we are made to face our highest nature. The next one, the Chönyit Bardo, where the gods and demons dwell, intermediate being, and the third one, the Siddha Bardo, where we come back toward physical rebirth. An interesting element in the Tibetan teachings is that the second three bardos, namely the bardos that come after death, as I indicated earlier, may be experienced to some extent by way of the first three, namely the dream bardo of altered states and so forth. If a person insightfully practices these, while still in the body, this may act as a very good preparation for what is to come when one leaves the body. Because the really important issue is not so much whether there is still a connection with the body or not, but whether the experience is from the non-body side, as it were. And so you can prepare yourself for your life after death by dealing insightfully and intelligently with your dreams or your visions. Very interesting notion, very interesting idea. I'll give you a little material here on the dream bardo because of that, because I think it's very important. And this, let's see. This is from a commentary by a Chinese scholar on the Bardo Tedul. Very insightful material, also has a lot of Western psychological material in it. And the author says, as we have indicated, all the different kinds of Bardo experience are essentially the same, even though they are different in existence and in their intensity. And he quotes C.G. Jung that dreams are spontaneous products of the unconscious. Thus, by analyzing our dream experience, we may be able to understand the real experience of death. The experience of dreaming is like other bardo experiences. It is the experience, in modern psychological terms, of the unconscious, which differentiates the bardo from